What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to The Avenue. On this week's show, we'll pay tribute to my old friend and bandmate, Steve Odle. Steve passed away on June 19th. He was 70 years old. During the 1970s, Steve and I sang together in a group called The Words of Wisdom. We recorded two singles as The Words of Wisdom and toured across North America. Though we never had a hit record, our music touched soul music fans around the globe, including Naptown's own Kenny Babyface Edmonds. During a 2017 interview with WFYI's Kyle Long, Babyface recalled watching the Words of Wisdom perform.
Oh, they were like superstars to us at that point. We were like, oh my God, it's Words of Wisdom. They had already made it. They were who we were trying to be.
For the next hour, we'll listen back to a 2018 interview Steve recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. We'll also listen to the music Steve recorded, including an unreleased session he cut after the demise of the Words of Wisdom. Let's hear an example now. This is Steve Odle with Smiling. That was Steve Odle with Smiling. Let's listen back to Steve's 2018 conversation with WFYI's Kyle Long. In this clip, Steve recalled his early years in Indianapolis.
I grew up as a pre-high school on the west side. I was planning on going to Short Ridge, and we moved in September of the year I was to start high school, and we moved to Washington Township. And music was, I guess, was always a part. Sung in the church choir, youth choir. And so from then on, I sung all through church and hooked up maybe my sophomore or junior year with a lady out from IU, Ruth McIntyre. And she was the one that taught me how to sing. You know, I had, I guess, some talent, but she was the one that taught me how to understand tonation and pronunciation and breath control. A lot of those things. So I studied under her for a good 2.5 years or so. I listened to as many different records as I could. My favorite group was the Temptations. I wanted to be David Ruffin. But at the same time, I listened to classics, Nat King Cole, Johnny Mathis. So then I said, well, yeah, I really like to be Johnny Mathis. And I think I probably consider myself more of a balladeer than anything. But I mean, for hours on end, I would listen to different records and started picking up on different styles and listen to how those singers presented that particular song. All I wanted to be was a singer. I enjoyed that microphone, and I don't think my mindset ever got more than 2 or 3 feet away from that microphone. It was just me and that microphone. And with the words, it was me, that microphone, and the group. I don't know if Butch and I ever talked about it, but I always thought to myself when we were out on the road, we were gigging, I said, you know, if somebody could guarantee me $150 a week, I could do this for the rest of my life. And I'm sure that anybody that takes their craft seriously, money was never an issue anyway. I mean, that's not why you were doing it. I remember we did our first, what I thought was first real professional acceptance kind of thing. There was a big showcase at the 20 grand. And I mean, anybody that was anybody doing quote unquote soul music or funk band music, anybody that was gigging and making money, that was working professionally, was at this showcase. I mean, Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign, I mean, it was just packed. We were the little kids of the group. We were somebody nobody knew about. Who is this group? Plus, we were different because we weren't a girl group, we weren't a boy group, we were a boy-girl group. And, you know, we're sitting there thinking, what are we doing here? You know, and we got to do our thing, and the crowd went wild. I mean, and at that point, all of a sudden, those folks that we kind of looked up to, all of a sudden, we're sitting back talking and exchanging stories and stuff, and I'm going, wow, yeah, we're here. And it, I don't think we got paid anything for it. We just were lucky enough to be on the show. So we got to do 3-4 songs or so. And from that point on, that's when I honestly believed that, okay, yeah, maybe we can do this. Yeah, we can do this, so.
At this point, your primary experience as a singer had been in the church.
Correct.
When did you start venturing away from the church and getting more into the secular side of things? Did it happen gradually or suddenly? What do you remember about that?
I think it happened with the words.
How did you get connected with the members of this group?
Butch Bird Dog Man. You know,
you guys went to school together, but he was a couple grades ahead of you, right?
He was a couple of grades, and he and his then wife were wanting to put a group together, and we ran into each other, and so we really got together in their apartment, and we started kind of working up some songs we thought we could sing, and we were doing it by the seat of our pants. I mean, solely. It was, I don't think we had, at least in my mindset, that we had a master plan. It was, hey, let's see what happens with this. Peaches came in, and the group, she was the alto, and Karen was the soprano, and so we started our group. I think we were kind of had the Friends of Distinction in the back of our mind. And we knew it was different because wasn't a whole lot of folks doing that sort of thing. But and we meshed together really well right off the bat. From the day one, I mean, every time we went out, boom, you know, we would kind of knock it out of the park. And I remember we even got a gig at Black Expo. It was at the fairgrounds. And we were opening for Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
It was the Superfly Review with Curtis Mayfield. Is that the concert?
Was that it? Okay. But I remember us going up on that stage, biggest stage we had ever been on. This was big that time. And when the spotlights hit, the thing that I remember the most was, I can't see anybody. I could hear them, but I can't see anybody out in the audience. And from the downstroke, all of a sudden, I mean, people went wild. And I mean, the place went crazy. And from that point on, we were running. I mean, we were getting gigs pretty regularly.
So you mentioned the group was successful on the live circuit. You were getting booked for different clubs and events and
right.
playing with huge superstar acts. When did you and the group start thinking about making a record? Is that something you wanted to do, or is that something?
Oh, yeah. I think we were all looking to find some material to record, and that's how we kind of came across Moose.
Charles Moose Amos, who wrote all the material that Words of Wisdom would record.
Yeah. On Lamp Records, yeah.
Yeah.
So we worked with Moose for, I don't know, maybe a couple of months or so, and we're finally able. We, at that time, had hooked up with Ricky Clark.
He was the group's manager. He was a well-known DJ on WTLC, and he became the group's manager, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so when we were ready to go in the studio, he got us some time in the studio, and we cut those two, maybe three records, because I found another one. We sold those. The neat thing, that first record that we put out, that was another milestone for us, hearing yourself on the radio. And that was a big deal. And I remember we hit the radio on what was called the extra list. So it wasn't the top 40. You were like in the top 45 or whatever. And we'd get a little playing time. And then the next week it went into like 38. So now we're in the top 40. Then the next week it's up in the top, it's like 21. And our record went like in 4 weeks from the extra list to like number 9 and 8 on TLC's list.
Let's pause and listen to the first single Steve and I recorded with the Words of Wisdom. From 1973, this is You Made Me Everything. That was my group, The Words of Wisdom, with our 1973 single, You Made Me Everything. That track featured my old friend Steve Odell on lead vocals. Steve passed away on June 19th. All of the songs we recorded as The Words of Wisdom were written and arranged by the late Charles Moose Amos, a talented Naptown musician known for his work with the Precisions, Care Package, and the Montiques. In this clip, Steve shared his memories of working with Moose.
And you talked about developing this material with Moose Amos. Tell me about working with him, what kind of guy he was, and what you thought of the songs that he'd written for you.
Moose was a big teddy bear. In some ways, he was different, but we were constantly, Moose had a lot of songs. We were trying to find what best fit us, what we connected the best with, and so that's how we came up with those couple of songs or whatever. And it was always a matter of, let's go in, put these down on tape, put them together, see what we can do. So it was always baby steps. We were always doing baby steps. And so Moose was really patient with us in teaching us the parts and the harmony parts, and we collaborated with him, but they were his songs.
Let's pause and listen to the flip side of our debut single for Lamp Records. From 1973, this is The Words of Wisdom with Do You Understand Me Now, featuring Steve Odell on lead vocals. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Steve Odell after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're paying tribute to my old friend and bandmate, Steve Odell. Steve passed away on June 19th. He was 70 years old. During the 1970s, Steve and I sang together in a group called The Words of Wisdom. We've been listening back to a 2018 interview Steve recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. And we've also been listening to the music Steve recorded, including an unreleased session he cut after the demise of The Words of Wisdom. Let's hear another track from that session now. This is Steve Odell with Whenever I Feel.
Whenever I think about loving someone, girl, it's you.
That was Steve Odell with Whenever I Feel. Steve and I had a lot of success during our time with the Words of Wisdom. In fact, during the mid-1970s, we were almost signed to one of the top music production companies in Philadelphia. But as we were about to enter the studio to record, our female vocalists, Pat Wilson and Brenda Averett, quit the band. Steve shared this story during his 2018 interview with WFYI's Kyle Long.
So the record took off locally. It was getting airplay on WTLC. Big airplay, as you mentioned. It broke into their top 20 at one point, right?
On the rotation.
On the station. And you had this very talented manager, Ricky Clark, who had a lot of connections in the music industry. He was connected with DJs all over the United States in the different soul markets. And Ricky told me he was trying to break you guys out onto the next level. And he told me a story that you guys had played a show at Stouffer's, which is now owned by Ivy Tech over here on Meridian, okay, with Blue Magic, the famous soul group Blue Magic. And Blue Magic was managed by WMOT,
right,
We Men of Talent, a production company based out of Philadelphia.
Right.
And Ricky started selling your group to WMOT. He wanted you guys to get signed and come under their production. And they bought on it. And you guys were set to go and record a song, Love Won't Let Me Wait, that would become a number one hit for Major Harris. And kind of the bottom fell out of the group, and the opportunity disappeared. Does this description sound accurate to you, and what do you remember about that?
Very accurate. We had made some more personnel changes, and we had a couple of young ladies that we were as hot as we could possibly be at that point. I mean, as far as live shows. Not that we didn't before, but we really looked good, we sounded good, we sounded good together. We made quite an impression on WMOT. And they flew us to Philly. We met with them, we talked, they wanted to know where we wanted to go, music business. We spent a couple of days with them. They wanted to put us out on the road. We were gigging pretty heavy at that time.
All over North America, right, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, we're going up into Canada, and they've got us booked. We've got a whole six-week tour in Canada, starting out in Toronto and going all the way over to Halifax. And we're getting rave reviews. And we were scheduled, we had it all scheduled out. We'd end up in Halifax, and from Nova Scotia, we were heading down the East Coast, show up in Philly. We were scheduled to go into Sigma Sound Studios. Bobby Eli had this song, and Bobby Eli was the rhythm guitar player for all of the sessions that were going on in Sigma Sounds. So he had this song that he had come up with. And so we're all set and ready. Unfortunately, again, we did the last show of the last night. And unbeknownst to us, and to this day I regret that they didn't at least come to us and say, hey, we're not happy, or we don't like. And to this day I don't know what it was. But in the middle of the night, Pat's husband and Brenda's boyfriend drove all the way from Indiana to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and they left in the middle of the night. And to this day, I don't know why. So when that happened, we showed up in Philly with half a group. Unfortunately, that song that we knew when we heard the song that it was hit. It didn't matter who sung the song. If we were going to be a one-hit wonder, this was going to be the song we were going to be a one-hit wonder with. It was just a, it was a, you knew it was going to be a hit record. And to see that go away, and it just so happens, as timing would be, that Major Harris had just left the Delphonics. So they said, they've got a chance at Major Harris. So they've got a song, they just don't have anybody to perform it, so to record it. So, boy, when Major Harris came up, they just, direction turned completely.
So basically your star vocalist quit the group, and that killed the deal.
The product that they saw when they were here in Indianapolis was not the product that we were able to produce.
Yeah, I can't imagine how crushing that must have been in some ways, especially as you watched this song climb the charts to the number one position. Oh, how did you feel hearing that song at the height of its popularity? Was it an experience where you just felt sick? Or I can't imagine.
You get past it. You just, one thing, you look and you always constantly are thinking, what could have been? What if?
The time is right. You hold me tight. And love's got me high. Please tell me yes. And don't say no, honey. Not tonight.
We continued on. I mean, Butch and I continued on. We knew one thing, what we had with wasn't going to work. So we regrouped. It took us maybe 6 months, but we hooked up with a girl named Debbie Dickinson. So now we're a three-piece stand-up vocal act, two guys and a girl. And we ended up being, we were different because we only had the three-part harmony. But we regrouped and we were still good. That's when we hit the Chitlin' circuit. And we toured with James Brown. We could still perform. But we must have did something right, because James Brown fired us. We were in Selma, Alabama. And we had been with Brown for quite a while now. And the way the routine went was that if there was a local act, the local act came up and performed. We performed just before James Brown came out. We put on one of the hardest shows we ever put on out in that baseball field. And, I mean, we were rocking. And we finished up with a pretty hot tune. And the crowd was just going crazy. And I remember they had to bring the police out kind of around the front of the stage. And, I mean, we are just tearing up. Go off stage. We always had that routine. We go off stage, come back when, you know, you take an encore and sing a few more bars and then you're done. We took, what, 2-3 curtain calls? I mean, we just kept coming back and back. James Brown fired us. And we learned that you don't do excessive curtain calls. That's saved for James Brown. Or for whoever is the headliner.
Ain't it bunkin' up? Ain't it bunkin' up? Ain't it bunkin' up? Huh. Ain't it bunkin'
up? Let's pause and listen to the final recording Steve and I made together as the Words of Wisdom. From 1976, this is You're a Friend of Mine, featuring Steve Odle on lead vocals.
Ain't
That was my group, The Words of Wisdom, with You're a Friend of Mine. That track featured Steve Odle on lead vocals. Steve passed away last month. He was 70 years old. We've been listening back to a 2018 interview Steve recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to their conversation as Steve shares his memories of the demise of the Words of Wisdom.
At this point, the group had had a lot of big success. As you mentioned, you played with James Brown, Curtis Mayfield. I think you did a show with Black Ivory. You did a show with Blue Magic. Yeah. You were touring with Jackie Moore. Is that right?
Yeah.
So you were working with some of the top stars in American music. You'd been on the doorsteps of having a number one hit. At what point did it start to fall apart and people start walking away from the project?
For me, we were doing a gig in Birmingham, big supper club in Birmingham. We weren't having any fun. Group is slowly, you can feel it kind of leaving. I'm getting some feelings of regret because I'm married, and my wife, not once did my wife ever say, hey, I can't handle this anymore. And I mean, sometimes we're going out on the road 6-7 weeks at a time and all. Didn't have cell phones back then, so you weren't on the phone 3 or 4 times a day. But we're doing this gig in Birmingham. And I show up at the club. I'm listening to the band, and I go over and sit at the bar. And the bartender turns and hands me a drink, and he said, on the house, man, and congratulations. I'm going, for what? He said, on your new baby. I said, what new baby? And he said, oh. And it was like he caught himself and said, I'm sorry, I thought you knew. I said, wait a minute, you know, and so now I'm freaking out because I know my wife is pregnant, but she's not due for about 4 months or so. So I'm going, what are you talking about? And then as it turns out, our managing company, which was Helen Greer, was a big booking agent back then. She knew, she had told, I don't know who else, but some other people in the group. Everybody knew but me. They were going to tell me, but they weren't going to tell me until after the show was over that night. And wasn't real good. I was able to cover, because that was one thing that I always learned, and I may have learned that from Miss McIntyre years before, that I remember she always said, don't no one monkey stop no show, and the show must go on. So you regroup, we did the show, but I said, hey, I got to get home, because she did deliver extremely premature baby. And I caught a flight out that next morning, flew back to Indianapolis. And she had miscarried once before. So this here, but this little one's living, but the prognosis isn't good. And as it turned out, she had a little girl. Little girl survived for 2 days, long enough in the state of Indiana that you had to file for a birth certificate, a death certificate, and you had to have them buried in a certified funeral cemetery. And we got that all done. Now, I knew that at that time it was Butch, Debbie, and myself, we were the group. And so I was a big part of that group. So if I wasn't there, they couldn't work. They don't work, they don't eat. So I remember my wife asking me, you know, she's so happy about this little one and all, and the doctor's saying it don't look good. And so after that was over, and she said, how long are you home for now? And I told her, I got to go back, because if I'm not there, the group can't work. The group can't work. Group can't eat. I said, so I've got to go back. And I could just see this kind of cloud kind of go over her face. But she said, I understand and all. But that was probably the start of the end for me. And we went on probably another 3-4 months or so. We were losing the spirit. We were getting on stage and it wasn't fun anymore. It had always been fun for me. You know, it could be 2 or 3 people out there. It didn't matter to me. It was starting to get to the point it wasn't fun for me. So I knew at that point, probably had to readjust and recommit to other things, and that's what I did. And my wife and I will celebrate our 48th wedding anniversary this year, so 45th maybe. So,
you came back to Indianapolis, and you eventually got involved with the Indianapolis Police Department, correct?
Eventually, I hit around, did some odd jobs here and there, even went to work for McDonald's Corporation. Eventually had a son and a daughter later, too. Got involved with the police department. I approached the police department almost the same way I approached the music business. I'll see what happens. We'll take it one step at a time. I said, these people can't be serious enough. They're not going to harm me. They're not going to give me a gun and a badge, sick me on the unsuspecting public. But one step led to another and led to another, and I ended up spending 30 years with the police department and had a successful career.
Let's pause and listen to another track from an unreleased solo session that Steve recorded after the demise of the Words of Wisdom. This is Steve Odle with I Don't Need Your Love. That was Steve Odle with I Don't Need Your Love. On this week's show, we're celebrating the life and music of Steve Odle. He passed away last month at the age of 70. We've been listening back to a 2018 interview Steve recorded with WFYI's Carol Long. Let's return to their conversation.
And you did eventually attempt to make some solo recordings, right? They were never released, but you did.
I did some, and I did.
Tell me about it, yeah.
I did those as a demo. I really was doing it to showcase me as versus showcasing the song. I don't know if it was a matter of we didn't get anything done with it as much as I didn't really necessarily want to do anything with it. It was kind of like, okay, I'll do it. Somebody likes it. Somebody wants to pay me for it, and all, I'll do it. They would have come up with a contract for $150 a week for life. I probably would have left the police department and signed it, but nobody did, so.
And this was in the early 80s when you recorded these?
Is probably that sound right? 83, yeah. Maybe.
And was that the last kind of attempt to throw your hat in the ring of the music business?
Yes. Yeah. As I said earlier, I was either all the way in, and I was trying to tip my toe in the water again, but I realized you're either all the way in or you're not out. And I was a long time, didn't sing at all anymore. I used to sing in the shower. I'd sing at breakfast. I'd sing at dinner. I was constantly singing. I wouldn't sing anymore. I mean, there was no crooning in the shower. There was no sitting and listening to records. And I just wasn't doing that. And like the songs that I put on wax, I'd probably hadn't heard for 30 years up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I said, as a Christmas or Father's Day present, I don't know.
Yeah.
My son. And where he found them, I have no idea. It was a total shock.
It must seem like a different world or a different life to you now, this time in the 70s when you're living life as a performer, working with artists like James Brown and Curtis Mayfield, all these huge figures in the music industry. How do you feel looking back now at that time of your life?
It was fun. I mean, it was fun. It was a learning experience. I went into the music business as a little kid, as a naive little kid, and I came out an adult.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for joining us for this celebration of my old friend and bandmate, Steve Odell. Steve passed away on June 19th. He was 70 years old. We send our sincere condolences to all his friends and family. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week. Same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.